History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And we have a chance to make a difference because we've learned those stories don't have to go untold if we'll just take the initiative to ask a few questions and take the time to listen to the memories that start to bubble up to the surface. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price it's been paid for our freedom. And when we set out on that journey, not only do we end up educated, not only are we entertained, but ultimately we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'd be remiss if I did not begin this episode by honoring the courageous American service members who paid the ultimate price this week in Afghanistan. Every man and woman in our armed forces today has chosen to serve our country, fully aware that they could be called upon to risk their very lives for the rest of us on any given day. The tragedy in Afghanistan is exactly that, a tragic turn of events. And we pray for the families of the fallen. We pray for the troops in harm's way today. And personally, I pray for something that these days feels like it might require divine intervention, that it might truly take a miracle. I pray for unity in our country. If you've listened to Hometown Heroes a time or two over all the years we've been privileged to share these World War II veteran stories with you, I'm sure you have heard many an aging vet note how united America was during World War II, that the solidarity on the home front and the common purpose felt by every soldier, sailor, airman, and Marine overseas was perhaps the most crucial element in the Allied victory that spared the free world from a totalitarian takeover. Unity to that degree may seem impossible in the era of divisiveness that we find ourselves entrenched in 2021. But here on Hometown Heroes, we've heard memory after memory from seemingly impossible situations that these aging veterans found themselves in all those years ago. And the fact that they've been here to tell those stories is evidence that so many of those impossible scenarios were possible after all. So yes, I do pray for unity, and I pray that the sacrifice of those brave Americans in Kabul and the more than 1 million men and women who have given their lives for this country since its founding 245 years ago will not be in vain. It's up to us to ensure that. And this program has always been a reminder to me that we can find hope and inspiration for an uncertain future by drawing on examples from the past. The day before that cowardly suicide attack at the Kabul airport killed 10 Marines, 2 soldiers, and 1 Navy corpsman, I was watching a live stream of a memorial service aboard an aircraft carrier with admirals, a big city mayor, and an NFL All-Pro paying tribute to a very special veteran. We're going to hear a little bit of that later on, but taking in that memorial service for Pearl Harbor survivor Stu Headley made me think of a couple of other incredible veterans we've lost in the last month. One, 105 years old, the other, 103. Stu was only 99. I know how grieved all three of them would have been by this week's events overseas because they lived through similar tragedies during World War II. We're going to revisit some portions of their stories today and then finish with some powerful moments from that celebration of life aboard the USS Midway Museum in San Diego. On Monday this past week came word that William Sanchez had passed away, less than a month after celebrating his 103rd birthday. Some knew him as Bill, others as Willie, but here on Hometown Heroes, we got to know him as someone who, even as a centenarian, could still articulate some of the feelings he experienced as a prisoner of war for more than 3 years. Mr. Sanchez's Army story started in 1940, and by 1941, he was headed to the Philippines.
I was a teenager. I wanted to go overseas, so it was a good opportunity for me to learn something. Things come about real fast, and you have to be ready for them.
And you were assigned to Corregidor.
Right.
Had you ever heard of that before?
No. All I heard about was The Rock. It was a little island, and there was a lot of activity all the time. But it was a good experience.
And what was it like there before December 7th, 1941?
Oh, December 7th changed everything. You're coasting right along, and all of a sudden, it's like an explosion. Things change fast.
because just a few hours after they bombed Pearl Harbor and the installations in Hawaii, they struck the Philippines.
Right. So the Philippines took quite a beating.
And I guess right before that, there had been the spotting of a Japanese fleet, so there was some suspicion?
Yes, they had spotted some up in the islands in Japan to sort of threaten our security. Times were different then, and it was difficult to accept the aggression of the Japanese. They wanted to dominate.
And you would see firsthand some of the worst examples of that.
That's right.
What was the first thing you remember about when they attacked where you were? What did you see and hear and experience?
Well, so many things happened, and so many things happened fast that you really didn't have time to think. You just acted accordingly, you know, according to the situation. I was right on Corregidor, right on the rock.
Uh-huh. And people who know some of that history know that after the Japanese attack, eventually when the Bataan Peninsula fell and there was the Death March, and they've heard about MacArthur leaving, and when MacArthur left, you were one who stayed behind.
That's right. We were left behind, not by choice, but it happened.
How did you feel about that at the time?
Not too good. The treatment wasn't very good at all.
And how about your supplies? Did you guys have the normal supplies you should have had?
No, not quite. We had to do without a lot of things, but we managed.
And as the Bataan Death March is happening across the way in April of 1942, are you guys getting updates? Are you aware of what's happening there?
We were pretty well up to date, yes. We knew what was happening at most posts. It was a difficult time for us.
How much time did you spend in the Malinta Tunnel?
Few months.
Yeah.
It was our only place we could sort of do our own thing. Those were hard days.
Yeah, as I try to imagine myself in your shoes.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's a pretty unique place to be, where you'd be pretty isolated and cut off from the rest of the world.
That's about true. Yes. You had no contact with the outside world.
And did you have a sense that at some point your capture was unavoidable?
Well, we knew it was going to happen, so we just went along with it. We had a very, very hard time. We had no say in the matter.
And after December 7th, we've got the rest of December and January and February and March and April. How often during that time were the Japanese bombing where you were and strafing Corregidor where you were?
They came repeatedly. They had no opposition whatsoever, so they came at will.
So that was just something you had to get used to?
That's it. You had to accept. You don't get used to it, but you have to accept it. It was a tough life. It was rough.
What do you remember about Cinco de Mayo in 1942?
Nothing but bad things. Everything that happened was bad.
That was the day they invaded Corregidor.
Right.
And at that point, they knew you had experience with machine guns, so they sent you out to a machine gun post?
Yes, I was at a machine gun post on the defense site. Life wasn't easy. It just, one bad thing after another would happen.
One of the reasons you've touched so many lives and inspired so many people is that you've made it through all this and you've survived all this.
That's it. I was able to endure, and I try to make things less difficult.
How did you do that?
Well, you roll with the punches and do the best you can. You accept it.
So on May 5th, after months of shelling, bombing, strafing, the Japanese are finally on your island.
That's it.
And they actually knocked out your machine gun post, right?
They did. They overwhelmed us. Their superiority was something that we couldn't endure.
But even though they hit your position, you weren't wounded and none of the men with you were?
We had some wounded, but it could have been worse.
And you went back to the tunnel?
Yes, sir. You had no freedom at all.
Well, and that was really going to be the case once the decision was made to surrender.
That's it. Actually, we didn't know what would happen at the surrender, but we found out real soon.
And there was a flag a big giant flag flying above your post on Corregidor?
Yes.
And I understand you were asked to take that flag down so the Japanese wouldn't get it?
Yes. We tried to preserve the flag itself so that it wouldn't fall into Japanese hands. We took the flag down and we hit it.
And it had been shot up a little bit, I guess, right?
It had a few shell shots on it, yes, quite a bit.
So did someone tell you to tear it into little pieces, or was that your idea?
No, it came about. I wouldn't say it was my idea, but it was the only thing we could think of. We tore it into little pieces so that it wouldn't fall into enemy hands. Once it was in little pieces, we just kept it. They wanted the flag in toto, and they didn't have the chance to get it.
I'm just imagining, you know, obviously you're someone who signed up to defend your country, and now you're overseas in a very difficult situation defending your country, and now you're having to take apart the emblem of your country. Was that an emotional experience?
Yes, it was. But you had to accept it, and that's what we did.
Were there some tears during that process?
Yes, there was. Quite a few.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I believe that I heard you mention before or read about it, that you made a statement at the time as you're completing this task that you never asked for, that the situation presented to you, about hoping no one else ever had to do that, what you were doing.
That's right. It was a very bad experience.
And I'm not trying to make you dwell in a bad experience. It's for us to understand what you went through helps us appreciate more what we have, what you and so many others paid for.
Yes. Yes, it was a very difficult time for us. You knew you were going to lose your freedom, so it was a hard thing to accept.
Did you ever think you were going to lose your life?
Yes, all the time. At any time, you figured this might be your last moment.
And when that surrender happened, you probably had no idea what to expect from the Japanese, right?
Right. We had no idea what was going to happen to us.
What did happen to you? What was the first thing they had you do?
Most of it was bad treatment and things that you don't really expect, but you have to endure.
So now you're a prisoner.
Yes.
And you have no idea how long you're going to be a prisoner.
That's the worst part.
So how did you face that? What gave you the strength or the hope to endure, to persist, to persevere?
Well, you never lose hope. You always think something better is going to happen. And you go on that basis. Things can't get worse.
But for you, as I understand your story, after you're a prisoner, they did get worse. The Japanese gave you a real brutal task.
The Japanese were real bad. It's something we had to learn to endure.
And they made you pile up all the bodies of the Americans and Filipinos who've been killed there?
Yes. They made us take care of all the bodies and everything, and we thought it would never end.
And then what did they do with those bodies that they forced you to gather?
Oh, they just piled them up, carted them up, and set fire to it. They weren't very kind. And all in all, it was a very bad experience.
And, you know, people today, some of the reference points they have to this experience, maybe one of the most well-known would be your friend Louis Zamperini, and they've seen the movie Unbroken, or they've read that book by Laura Hillenbrand.
Yes.
Or read Louis' book.
Louis Zamperini happened to be in my camp.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew real well what he wrote about.
So when he wrote about being tortured?
Yes.
You experienced similar things?
Well, life itself was a torture. And it's just something you had to learn to endure.
How often did you think about your brother or your sister or your cousins, your family back here?
Quite often you think of what life is like to be with your family. Yes, we were always hungry. So they knew what our limit were and everything.
And I'm sure it was different at different times in different camps, but could you give us an example of like what a daily ration might be that they gave you to eat or drink?
It would vary. Sometimes we would eat good. Sometimes we wouldn't eat at all. So it would vary. It's nothing that would be steady. You just learn to accept things as they are for the moment. There's always one or two that are different than the others, but overall, you don't get much help.
And how much of an idea did you have, or how much information did you have about what was happening outside of your prison camps?
Oh, you hear rumors and all that, but you learn that most of the things are not valid and things, and you just accept them as they come. It's a hard life.
And so when you guys were surrendered to the Japanese, you were 23.
Yes.
And then you had your 24th birthday, your 25th birthday, your 26th birthday, all as a prisoner.
Yes.
When you're in prison camp and your birthday comes around, are you even aware that it's your birthday? Do you know what day it is?
Well, you accept it as it is, but it's not very pleasant, you know.
And what were some of the things that the Japanese required you to do?
Whenever they could, they'd put us to work, and we would have to do labor and things that we were not accustomed of doing.
And I imagine if you're not eating much, you don't have much strength either.
Your energy level is very low, so you just do the best you can.
And how would they react if one of you was unable to do what they asked you to do?
They would do many unpleasant things that would make it difficult you to enjoy life as a whole. It's a difficult life all around. Just to survive was important. So that's what you thought of the most. How am I going to survive all this?
Well, and I guess that's the biggest question. As we look to your example and we marvel at the fact that you're still here and still able to tell this story, the biggest question is, how did you survive? How'd you do it?
It's a mind over matter thing. You have to think positive that eventually it's gonna end.
Were there ever days where you woke up and felt, I don't know if I can do this anymore?
Many, many a day. How much longer do I have to do this?
And again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just wanting to understand how you really felt and what your experience was really like. But a situation like that, those circumstances that no one would ever choose, how does that affect your view of God or your feeling as to whether it's worthwhile to pray or if anyone's ever going to help you? Is that something that was relevant for you?
Sometimes you wonder if there's any help. It's very difficult to go through the things you have to endure, because where do they come up with these ideas? It's not an easy life.
And I don't want to leave anything out that would be important to you, but one thing I'm sure that a lot of people be interested in and hopefully is a little more pleasant memory for you, and I know there's a lot of things that happened over the time from the time you became a prisoner to when you were liberated, but help me understand what it was like when you guys started to realize, hey, the end is near and we may get to taste freedom again.
It's a very, very good feeling to think that you're going to have freedom again. Just the thought of it makes it exceptional. You always think the best is going to happen. You never think of the worst. It's always the best.
Where were you, and can you help me understand what it was like when that taste of freedom finally showed up again?
Oh, exhilarating. I was a prisoner in a prison camp when they finally decided to surrender. And boy, that was a great day. It was a great feeling just to be free. It was just something you experience once in a lifetime, freedom. You realize what the word freedom really means.
That was William Sanchez, who passed away this past week at the age of 103. UCLA, which had once offered him a boxing scholarship, had hoped to honor Mr. Sanchez at a football game next month. When we come back, a one-time UCLA football player who just passed away at 105. He, too, was in the service before Pearl Harbor. He, too, had quite a story to tell and an incredible legacy to leave. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.